Angels Unawares, a novel by Jeffrey Anderson, serial number 25, read by the author. Day 6. Laura sat beside Josh. The clock on the nightstand read 2:12. That would be a.m. Clear, cold night outside the window. The quarter moon's silver glow hinting at the late frost's steady approach. Inside, the room was generously warm. Sherry had recommended turning up the thermostat to help warm Josh, as his metabolism had slowed dramatically and his blood pressure was very low. In this seemingly casual suggestion, Laura had noted in Sherry the shadow of a deeper concern. Her words too carefully chosen, the skin around her eyes tightening into the briefest of winces. The patient, for his part, seemed to be resting comfortably, on his back with the covers tight to his chin, his hands and arms outside the covers at his sides. They had honored his request and not reconnected the sensors. The monitor and its stand had been rolled off to a corner of the room and stood there in the dim light like a one-eyed judge surveying the proceedings. Without the anchoring tethers of the sensor's leads, Josh's body appeared to be marooned on the bed's island, lost at sea and utterly alone. Which, of course, he was, Laura thought, totally alone from here on out. Whatever her caring ministrations, her words and love and actions, even her warm body pushed up against his cooler parts, the balance of Josh's journey was requisitely solitary, at least in regards to worldly companions or supplies. Laura thought about that long-ago Chinese emperor with his thousands of terracotta soldiers to accompany him in his final walk, or the Egyptian pharaohs with their servants and pets and abundant provisions. All were just as alone as Josh was now. No marathoners training for this, no trumpet's call of reinforcements, no siren's wail of civil preparedness. But what about her preparedness to witness, to say goodbye after only so recently saying hello for the first time in decades? Well, no prohibition on supplies for her. She had this comfortable chair, this nightstand's light, this can of Diet Cola, the full caffeine kind, with plenty more in the fridge. She'd stay awake this whole night, least she could do, for Devon, for herself, even if it mattered not, for the lone, traveling Josh. Laura took a long swallow from the can, set it carefully on the pottery coaster on the nightstand, took up her pen and pad, and began to write. It was the day after we first had sex. I wish I could use the euphemism made love to refer to that auspicious event. But there was no love there in the back seat of your mom's car, in that awkward, uncomfortable, sometimes painful groping, then probing, then sweaty, panting release by you into my undefended vagina. Well, let's call it what it was. My unprotected, pristinely vulnerable womb. It was a flagrant risk we both were aware of before we started, and as we commenced, and while we continued, and when you climaxed, and in the heart-slowing seconds after you finished, that turned into a heart-stopping, anxious wait through the ensuing minutes, hours, days, and weeks. Till the onset of my long-delayed period, no doubt delayed by the probing of your penis and the stress of our wait. Delayed but finally granted as a reprieve. But the day after that forgettable, unforgettable event, in the full-blown gale of the chance we'd taken and its potential consequences, pregnant at 16, and in the midst of a late fall blizzard, you decided to go hunting and left me alone in your bedroom in your family's empty house, all other occupants off doing chores of one sort or another, left me alone to stew in the juices of my full boiling fears. And I was far into those fears, weighing the challenges of getting an abortion without my parents' knowledge against the challenges of carrying a baby while keeping up with my homework. Well into those fears when I heard the pop pop of two gunshots through the muffling effects of the storm in the thick walls of the house. I went to the window that overlooked the side yard that led to the fields, that led to the swamp, that led to the far-off river. The snow had slackened some, and I could just make out the river flowing slate gray in the approaching dusk. In the middle distance were the clean mowed hay fields, now a flat sheet of 6 inches of luminous snow, merged into the marsh grass hummocks of the swamp. I could barely see a lone figure standing still amidst the storm. Your shotgun, which had surely been the source of those two quick shots, was again on your shoulder. In the whole panorama, nothing was moving except the swirling snow and the barely perceptible southward flow of the river. My eyes locked on your figure and waited for you to move. The seconds stretched into minutes, and you still didn't budge. I began to wonder if you were an apparition born of the storm and my stress, or maybe a sapling that had grown up on that spot since I'd last had cause to look, a sapling that my eyes and heart had made into you out of need and hope. Then finally you moved, so slowly and deliberately that I wondered if it was my mind making you move, desiring you to move, back toward me, of course. But no, it was real movement, amidst the snow and the gathering dark. I could see you raise one leg slowly, set it on a hummock, then raise the other leg and step carefully to the next. And in that moment, I began to sense everything you sensed. Your deliberate strides carefully from one hummock to the next, not wanting to fall into the dark, uncertain water and muck between those dry mounds. The gun on your shoulder, the barrels damp with melting snow. The near-numb fingers of your right hand gripping the slick, cold wood of the gun's stock, brushing the frozen trigger guard. I felt you sigh at the discovery of the dead pheasant in the shallow water between two clumps of grass. Felt you take a deep breath as you bent and grabbed the bird, its flesh still warm beneath the damp, cold feathers. And then you placed that bird in your game pouch. When I stepped back from the window, your room was startlingly dark. But I didn't turn on the light, didn't need to or want to. I sat down on your bed in the heaviness of the early dark and knew just then the lightness, both brilliance and freedom from weight, of true love. Whatever had happened or did happen inside my womb, embryo lodged or egg soon flushed away, we would find a way onward and together. I didn't think of it then in so many words. In fact, I've never put words to the moment at all till just now. And in so doing, wonder if mere words, these or others, could come close to capturing that moment's full import or ramifications. I mean, how can one ever capture the flash of the creation of permanent love? Permanent despite lengthy separation and estrangement, indeed permanent because it outlasted such gaps and wanderings and mistakes and absences, with one more separation to come. Oh, Josh, my Josh, emerge again from the gray shadows at any time of your choosing, or of heaven's choosing, or God's. Come home to me with the double pop of gunshots, or lonely trumpets mourn in the distance, or the whisper of flake fall through dimming day. But come home to me. Don't leave me to the ravages of aloneness or the enticing fallacy of self-sufficiency. Don't ever leave me again. How could we have drifted so far apart then? How can we be ripped apart now? The answer both times, we weren't, we aren't, we won't be. Or so I pray. Laura set her pen down and closed the pad. She looked across Josh to the window beyond. The moon had set and taken with it the night's silver glow. Yawning, voracious dark poured into the room, trailed by the twinkle of stars. Even that light, already dead, millions of years gone. Laura leaned back in the chair and exhaled slowly, understanding for the first time the full embracing peace of resignation. The end of serial number 25 of Angels Unawares.